This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Laura Sullivan in for Guy Raz. The Supreme Court this week heard arguments about the fate of 2,500 offenders who were sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole when they were teenagers. 79 of them were 13 or 14 years old when they committed their crimes. Many prosecutors and family members of victims spoke out about the need to keep the sentences in place. But in a small building cafeteria, just a few blocks from the Supreme Court, a different group of family members quietly came together. Half of them were families of teenagers who committed horrible crimes.
My name is Grace Warren. I'm from Illinois, and I have a son that's serving a life sentence without the possibility of parole.
Hi, I'm Essie. My oldest son is serving a juvenile life
without parole. Hi, my name is Deborah Buchanan, and my husband is serving life without parole.
And then there was the other half, family members of the teenagers' victims.
Hi, my name is Bill Pelkey. I live in Anchorage, Alaska. My grandmother was murdered by four teenage girls.
I'm Linda White.
My 26-year-old daughter, Kathy, was killed by a juvenile.
My name is Angel Cradle. My son was killed less than 5 years ago.
My name is Akilah Sherrells. My 19-year-old son, Terrell, was murdered.
And I am here to support this campaign.
People can change. I do believe they deserve a second chance.
And I'm here to support Citizen for Second Chance.
I believe that every child has a second chance.
This is not a group you often hear about. Victims' families who want the teenage perpetrators to get an opportunity for parole, who want to see sentences of life in prison for teens overturned. Many say they have often been unwilling to talk about the issue because they have been accused of not missing their loved ones enough. But on this day, in this room, there was enough sorrow to fill an afternoon. There was also enough forgiveness. That's our cover story today. Families devastated by the actions of teenagers who want those teens to one day get a chance to make amends. People like Mary Johnson.
I don't remember going down 8 flights on the elevator. I don't remember the short walk to the car. I don't even remember the short ride to my sister's home.
19 years ago, Johnson was at work in Minnesota when her sister-in-law called to tell her 20-year-old son, Loramian, was dead. He had been shot to death. There was a fight at a party and a gun.
It was 2 or 3 days after Loramian was murdered. I got a call from the detectives. And he told me he had picked up a 16-year-old boy.
The boy's name was O'Shea Israel.
He was an animal. I wanted him charged as an adult, first-degree murder, in prison for the rest of his life.
Then you went through the court process, and you were in the courtroom, I'm sure, when he was sentenced.
Yep, I was there every time there was something going on because, I mean, I hated O'Shea.
Sitting here, off to the side of the rest of the group, Mary Johnson smiles. She looks directly across the table at O'Shea Israel.
O'Shea, did you kill Loramian?
Yes, I did. I was 16. He was 20.
O'Shea Israel was initially facing life in prison without parole. But the judge lessened the charge and sentenced Israel to 25 years, most of which he served. He got a few years off for good behavior. It was a long time since that night at the party.
Neither one of us wanted to back down. And me just being foolish enough to think that I held the most power and because I had a gun. He and I probably could have been the best of friends had we just taken the time to communicate.
At 16, though, Israel says none of it was really registering.
All I can do is kind of shut down and numb myself to it. It wasn't until years later that I started to make that connection with, like, wow, you know, I really did do this. I really am responsible for someone losing their life.
Johnson and Israel, and everyone else in this room, came together this week at the urging of a nonprofit group called the Campaign for the Fair Sentencing of Youth. But how O'Shea Israel and Mary Johnson ended up sitting here at this table is mostly a testament to Johnson. She struggled with her grief for more than a decade, but one day she read a passage from a book about two mothers who had lost sons. The mothers were in heaven.
And one mother said, I would have taken my child's place on the cross if I could have. And the other mother fell on one knee, and she said, oh, well, you are she, the mother of Christ. And the mother of Christ lifted her up, kissed a tear from her cheek, and said, tell me of your son so I may grieve with you. And she said, my son is Judas Iscariot.
A small seed lodged itself in Mary Johnson's head.
Over the years, I just kept getting this. I'm to do this to mothers, bring these two mothers together. And I knew that in order to do that, I would have to meet O'Shea.
A caseworker came to me and told me, well, hey, Mary Johnson wants to talk with you. You know, I had to really think about it. Like, if my life was taken, I hope the person that took my life would, if they thought they was man enough to take my life, be man enough to face my mom and give her the closure that she needed.
And so early one morning in 2005, Mary Johnson went to the prison in Stillwater, Minnesota, where O'Shea Israel was incarcerated.
Halfway up, I just broke down and I said, God, I cannot do this. I'm not ready to do this.
But she made it to the conference room and took a seat. Israel says he was ready if Mary Johnson wanted to yell at him or even hit him. But what she said instead surprised him.
I said, look, I don't know you. You don't know me. You didn't know my son. My son didn't know you. I said, we need to lay a foundation. We need to get to know one another. And that's what we did.
They talked about Mary Johnson's son, about her pain, about Israel's remorse. And then they talked about their lives. They talked for 2 hours. Mary Johnson had only planned to visit Israel once. But a moment at the end of the meeting seemed to bind them together when O'Shea Israel asked Mary Johnson if he could hug her.
I felt like, you know, she just offered me her forgiveness. I don't have anything to offer her. At least I can show her some compassion.
They met halfway and embraced.
I tell you, I had something going on in my feet, physically moving, stirring in my feet, and it just moved up and up and up, and I felt this whatever leave me. And I knew that all that hatred and the animosity and the anger, the bitterness, I knew that all that stuff I had inside for 12 years, I just knew it was over. It was over with.
Theirs is not a surprising story in this cafeteria. Each of a dozen tables held families of perpetrators and families of victims, all talking to one another.
Kason Xavier Evans, that was my son's name. His nickname was Biscuit.
Charletta Evans tells her table that 17 years ago, her 3-year-old son was killed in a drive-by shooting by 2 14-year-olds and a 15-year-old. All three got life without parole. Across from her, Mona Schlottman nods her head. Her son was killed by an adult and an accomplice who was a teenager.
I knew he did not get a fair trial, but I didn't care at that time. I was just glad that he had been caught and locked up. And that's as far as I could really care.
It takes a minute before Essa Mathis speaks up. Her son Ralph is serving life without parole.
My son, the seeds of wrong decisions were sown a long time before those decisions were made. You know, by the time my son was 15 years old, not only did he not have a father, but I had been married and divorced 3 times because of my own brokenness and not knowing how messed up I was. I had to own a part of that.
Everyone in the room wants the teens to pay a price for their crimes, for however many decades in prison. But for every story of trauma victims' families shared, the teens' families seem to describe an equal number of stories of trauma in the perpetrators' lives. Experts have argued that teenagers' brains are less developed than those of adults, so they are more impulsive and less able to weigh the consequences of their actions. But prosecutors say the sentence is an important tool. I spoke with Scott Burns, who is head of the National Association of District Attorneys. He says the sentence is rarely used. 99% of juveniles do get parole, but he says sometimes it's needed.
39 states passed laws, and some of them recently, to provide that in the rarest of cases, life without parole for a juvenile be a possibility. If they were repealing all of these laws, that would likewise show a consensus the other way, but it's not happening in America.
Do you think that someone who commits such a heinous crime at such a young age has the ability to change and express remorse over the decades to come? And do you think that's worth anything?
Well, that's the debate, isn't it? Is it the goal to rehabilitate someone to see that they change? Or is it also the goal to do justice to the victims and others, and there is some retribution about this for paying for that crime.
But if you ask Mary Johnson, she says for her,
Rehabilitation is retribution. She says she knows this because she sees it every day in the apartment next to hers. Not long after O'Shea Israel was released from prison, he moved into the apartment next door.
I'm in his business. I get on his case because he won't take my garbage out. You know?
When she's in my business, I really know that she's in my business out of care and concern. She don't want to see me suffer or go through anything that'll cause me any kind of harm or pain. Knowing that I cause her pain, but she's the very person that protects me from it, it's just like, wow.
Mary, you're crying.
Yep, but it's true. He's suffered enough in what he's done, you know. Young people deserve to have a second chance. We all deserve to have a second chance.
Every day, O'Shea Israel stops by to check in on Mary Johnson. They spend their weekends together. Johnson looks across the table at a man, no longer a child, who 2 decades ago killed her 20-year-old boy. To me, she says, O'Shea is like a son. The Supreme Court will rule in the next few months on whether life without parole for teenagers is constitutional.